Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. On this show, we've gone in depth about the nature of ley lines and how rituals are conducted at certain energy line anchors to imbue natural electromagnetic grids intended to affect a society. When a private firm announced it would build one of the largest Ferris wheels on Staten Island, past guest Matthew Deleuze explained its occult function and how Ferris wheels are strategically placed in cities across the world. In this case, the structure on Staten Island would face the nexus of ley lines that meet somewhere in the middle of the harbor. However, this proposal came a few months after Superstorm Sandy ravaged the northeast coast, and many New Yorkers questioned the safety of constructing the giant wheel. In August of 2015, images of endangered animals were projected onto the side of the Empire State Building. The project was sponsored by the Oceanic Preservation Society and Obscura Digital. An image of Kali, known as the goddess of time, change, power, and destruction, was also projected during this event. If you've been listening to this show, you'll know the importance of the Empire State Building within the energy grid. It's one of the tallest obelisks in the country, and it's set on an energy intersection similar to the Great Pyramid of Giza. The exterior of the building is clad in Indiana limestone panels. Those panels are significant for imbuing a consciousness, says our returning guest, Peter Shampoo. Peter says ley lines carry a telluric current, which is an electromagnetic energy that also fuels human creativity. There's another effort to charge significant energy points with a certain consciousness, and this is a consciousness of war and human sacrifice. 28-meter-tall 3D-printed models of the 2,000-year-old Temple of Palmyra in Syria, also known as the Temple of Baal, are to be put on display in London's Trafalgar Square during UNESCO's World Heritage Week starting April 18th. Although the original plans have been canceled, replicas of the temple were to be temporarily placed in Times Square, New York City, and Leicester Square in London. Peter Shampoo joins us to talk more about the energetic implications of these locations, dates, and historic reference. Peter is a geographer. He maps the living earth, and he's an earthkeeper. His work brings the individual and community into relationship with our living planet. He's the author of several books, including Gaia Matrix and Moon Rivers. Peter, welcome back to Another News.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here again.
Oh, as a reminder, how would you characterize the substance of energy that's channeled through the ley lines?
Well, ley lines first were brought into the popular consciousness in England. England has a number of these, well, they were the ones that actually coined the term ley lines, and or L-E-Y lines. And in England, there was quite a elaborate system that was developed by the megalithic builders of England. And this this ley system that they had was tuned to the solar cycles. You'll find Stonehenge along such ley lines. And it was quite important to these megalithic builders to know when the sunspot cycle occurred, 11.5 cycle, because that's when the ley lines were most active. And ley lines tend to be more active in the summer period during agricultural growth seasons. So it's thought that these ley lines actually were a fertilizing force for the fields of southern England, where you'll find them crisscrossing the land most, you know, in most concentration in England. You'll find a similar phenomena in China, and in China they call it qi, the qi that runs through the lines. So it's different cultures have different ways of describing them. Australians speak of them as song lines. But they all have this kind of plasmatic life force that courses through them. And ley lines tend to focus energies at certain cultural sites and fuel the culture with this creative power, this chi, this life force. So in places like New York City, they have, I've identified multiple half dozen ley lines, major ley lines that intersect there in Manhattan, that all carry these currents to the city to fuel the creative power that is New York City. Essentially, it's electromagnetic, and it's being transmitted via the earth and focused by man through constructions, through placing megalithic stones in a straight line, placing cities in a straight line along the eastern seaboard. That kind of focuses and catalyzes this energy and brings it into a purpose and a place of so that the people can flourish from it. I think the Masons were quite keen on these ley lines and tried to set up the early colonies to work with these energies and to create a coherence within the city states of the Eastern Seaboard.
Well, Peter, yes, you've researched this area extensively and published several books on this topic in depth, and we're looking at right now at a particular event that has a lot of intersecting variables that are really interesting to look at right now. And although the original plans to place the replicas of this ancient temple of Baal on energy points in New York City and London were canceled, can you give listeners some history of Palmyra, Syria, and how it ties into a chapter in your recently published book, Moon Rivers, A Geographic Exploration of Earth's Primary Rivers?
Yeah, okay. You're referring to the installations that were going to 3D printed replicas of the Arch of Palmyra to be installed in Trafalgar Square and New York City's Times Square.
Right.
And just to segue from ley lines into this, I should say that ley lines are a alignment of natural and cultural features. Essentially, that's how you find them. When there's you find a straight line across the land, and you establish that they're similar, like standing stones or churches or cities, it suggests a certain frequency that is being carried by that particular ley line.
Okay.
With the Palmyra art installations that they were proposing for these two sites, and referencing the third that was destroyed by ISIS or ISIL or Daesh or however you want to call them. Daesh is the latest invader of this ancient land of Palmyra. Palmyra, P-A-L-Y-A-R-A, so Pal-my-ra, you know. You know, in English, you would say, you know, Ra is my friend,
right.
If you will. But
Ra, meaning the sun god.
Ra, the sun god. He's a fun god.
My pal Ra.
So what they were proposing to do is create an artificial ley line that matched an existing ley line in very close proximity. So they were what this proposed installation would have done was would be carried on this wave of this ley line that goes along the eastern seaboard. So this great ley of America you can recognize as this line from Mexico City through Atlanta, coming up through Washington D.C., Baltimore, through Trenton, through Philadelphia, through New York City, on up through New Haven, Boston, and then over the pond through London and Dublin and down through Brussels and into the Middle East, coming to shore in the Middle East there around the Lebanon-Israeli border. It's tough to get an exact projection over the planet because the planet's spherical, or, you know, all the projections that we work with are spherical, and the planet is actually in more of an ellipse.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes right through that vicinity of Palmyra. So this particular line has to do with warfare and conquering of nations through Europe. You'll find along this alignment, you'll find like Waterloo and where the Battle of the Bulge was. And you can find any number of war zones from Kosovo and down into the Middle East presently. So what Palmyra is a place that, ancient place. It was a trade center during the 200 BCs. That's where it really got its start as a, on the Silk Road, getting all those, trade things happening between Rome and Persia and Greece. And they were right in the middle of all that. And they were a crossroads or a cross-cultural place. And they would borrow architectural designs and social designs from all the different people that they associated with coming along that trade route. And over the millennia, different groups have come in and taken over the place, Romans and then Christians, and then the Arabs came in and took it over. And they had their own language, but they also had a whole variety of different religious practices that they also borrowed from other cultures. And one of the things that they borrowed was this worship of this god Bel, B-E-L or B-A-A-L, variously spelled. It's also known as Marduk or Moloch. The name reminds me of Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch. To me, carries the energy of Baal.
There's so many variations of this name that Murdoch does fit in there.
Yes. So this god was not a fun god at all, like Ra. He demanded the sacrifice of young children. That was what the practice was. You would take your firstborn son whenever things were going awry, and when the priests wanted to slim out the population or do something to wreak control on people, they would call for the sacrifice of the firstborn. And that practice, that sacrifice of the firstborn, you see echoed through time and space. You can see it in the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross, for instance. That was a way in which to put an end to these sacrifices of the firstborn. In the Bible, you have Abraham and Isaac. God said to Abraham, "Kill me a son." Abe said, "Man, you must be putting me on." Bob Dylan wrote a song about it. It was quite good. And, it's just like, "Kill me a son," and then they replaced it with a lamb. We'll start sacrificing lambs. So there's this thing of sacrifice, human sacrifice, animal sacrifice, to placate this god Baal and to placate gods in general.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow we need to, as a human, so we need to do this, which I think isn't any correct idea.
When I was reading in a book titled In the Shadow of Moloch, the author mentioned that humans were the first to be sacrificed, then animals such as goats, lambs, and then fruit and vegetables eventually. But humans were first, as you're pointing out here as well. Baal was the name of the supreme god worshipped in ancient canon and Phoenicia, which ties into your Moon Rivers chapter.
Yes. The sacrifice of the innocent is kind of echoed on both ends of this ley line. Over in Mexico City in the Aztec Teotihuacan, they had these sacrifices. 10,000 people in a day would be sacrificed. And then, you got the same thing happening over in the worship of Baal. And in my book, Moon Rivers, I look at patterns. That's my thing, you know, looking at patterns in the land to discern ley lines. And there are these things called, earth rings. In a sense, they're circular ley lines. These earth rings are, you know, you can see in the arcs of landforms like Mexico, California. That's the edge of an earth ring, and mountain ranges tend to have this curvy linear form to them that reference the center. And rivers also have this idea of a chord. So when you're drawing a circle, you have a radius, so center and an edge. I've been looking at rivers as a geometric chord or a radius. And when you use the Jordan River, which has its headwaters up in southern Lebanon and goes down to the Dead Sea, if you take that radius from headwaters to its termination, that generates a circular form. And Palmyra is right on the edge of that circular form. And when you take that circle in total, it encompasses an area which is roughly the land of Cana. Back in those way back times, the Egyptians were one of the conquering group that came in there and made that part of their kingdom. While they were busy worshiping this great pantheon of gods, the Egyptians, the subjects of the Egyptians up in Cana, decided to start worshiping this guy Baal. And Baal was a monotheistic god, and the Egyptians they thought that was outside the Ma'at, or the order of the universe, M-A-A-T, Ma'at. It's the order of the universe. And so they thought it was an abomination, and it was an abomination to be sacrificing humans to this as well, because they didn't abide by this type of thing. They didn't find that was necessary. So they were trying to put an end to it and had a few excursions and failed because they were so well fortified up there in Cana, particularly the city of Ashkelon. Palmyra would have been the most northern extent of Cana, you know, sort of the northern end of this wheel. But Ashkelon is right there at Gaza.
Oh, in Gaza, okay.
Gaza, the border of Gaza and Israel. It's right in the northern end of Gaza. And that was a city-state that had this fantastic spring. The spring was surrounded by a fortified city, and they couldn't break the walls, and they couldn't starve out the people because the people ate hogs, pig. And the pigs ate the dead people, and the people ate the pigs, and you know, it was a cycle of everybody kind of got crazy and sick. I think that was one of the reasons for the prohibition of eating hogs, was the experience that the Israelis had when they were the conquering people and came in and took over Cana. They found these people eating pigs all the time, and they were quite sickly and kind of an abomination of a human. So as a result of that, the Egyptians said, hey, you know, we can't do anything about it. We might as well curse this land. We'll put a curse on it that favors the invader. And since this curse has been placed on that, we've had this succession of invaders coming in from the Crusades and, you know, the Arabs. And it's against anybody who lives there revolting or speaking of revolt or trying to go against the power that be. But it's in favor of any kind of group that comes in and tries to take it over. So you have this this curse put out by the Egyptians is chronicled in the Stela of Aswan. It's still in the books to this day. At one point in time, I tried to undo this curse, see if, I did some research to see if there was a way in which this curse could be undone.
Oh, really? Okay.
Put an end to this business out there. But I consulted with an Egyptologist I knew, and Vincent Bridges. He's, he's passed along now, but Vincent said that this curse is, it's all tied in with monotheism, and that the only way for the curse to die off is for the monotheism to die off. And because, you know, he says that it's the nature of monotheism to destroy itself. You know, one group's monotheism is not the other group's monotheism, and, you know, there's a cognitive conflict there that just can't be resolved.
It's built into the religious system.
It's just built into it because, you know, I mean, Allah is the one true God, and, you know, talk to somebody else and there's another one true God, and, you know, it's endless, and fighting it, you know. So what ISIS is doing, going in there, is essentially the same thing as the Baal worshippers that were doing, you know. But, you know, they're sacrificing humans in the name of God, for God, in honor of God. You know, I mean, it's just it's absurd that someone would think that a God would want that, you know, to me. I don't know. But
In this ancient land as well, where it took place thousands of years ago. Well, that brings us to this particular event that has been planned for a while and then canceled abruptly. And it brings us to this event, the significance of replicating this arch, which now it's not going to be the Temple of Baal arches. It's going to be the Arch of Triumph after all this work has been done, which is really interesting as well. Work by these people who had to get the 3D images created and then printed. This takes a lot of money and time. And now what? We don't know the pressure that was on them to cancel this, but it's still significant that the proposed event existed. And that's what we're doing here in this show, is we're looking at what the structure, the energetic structure of this event and the meaning of this event is, and if it were to take place. Going now to Times Square, would you please tell listeners about the ley line connections to Times Square in context of this larger event we're talking about?
Whew. Well, yeah, there's a jump. Times Square, you know, certainly a significant place, gathering place for the, you know, the end of the war, you know, that sailor kissing that nurse, you know, Times Square, all kinds of iconic images of the ball falling, you know, the CD period during 60s and 70s when it was, you know, 42nd Street, Den of Iniquity, right on through to present day glitz. Times Square was where Creek went through at one point, the great kill of New York, and there was a horse and carriage placed there for a while, but now it's considered the crossroads of the world. And that energy of being the crossroads of the world is played out in the crossing of 7th Avenue and Broadway. And these two planes of 7th Ave and Broadway, while not exactly on ley lines, are parallel to ley lines that go through New York City. So you have New York City that is all these it's not north, south, east, west, but it's laid out in a grid pattern, rectilinearly, from edge to edge, top to bottom. You got this thing called Broadway going across town, creating all these X's and everything as it goes through. It's one of the few roads that actually transects this grid pattern. So Broadway is where nature comes in, where the flow, the initial flow of energies that came down the island, the flow of chi comes through. So where it comes into Times Square, it's kind of a pooling that happens, or a vortex that happens there. Wherever you have a crossing in energy flows, via traffic or streams or blood, you get these little vortices that occur. So there's a vortex happens, and when there's an intense amount of human emotion focused in one spot, that builds. There's a memory well that builds, and it can be changed over time. Again, you know, there's this kind of a buildup of energies, you know, from the, you know, there's all kinds of metaphors that, you know, it's a metaphorical language, geomancy or geography, as I prefer to call it. But, you know, when you look at place, you know, the energetic signature of place. And, you know, you have, you know, initially the 42nd Street porn shops were catering to this lower chakras. And the city was kind of operating on these lower chakras at the same time. And as it Times Square changes in frequency, the city changes in frequency. So you know, now with Times Square operating more on the crystal ball kind of energy of things, where the light is descending, you know, on New Year's Eve, but also the metaphor of you know, the focus of that being, you know, the high point of this event here, the change of the year, the change of time, the lowering of the light, you know, have this New York City that is going through its changes, and, you know, some positive ones have been occurred. Crime rates have gone down, and creativity has gone up.
Mm-hmm. Despite the ubiquitous microwave transmissions and Wi-Fi that affects the brainwave's natural affinity to telluric energy.
Right, that's separating us from the natural energies, for sure. It makes it real challenging for a human these days to tune into spirit because of these brain-altering electromagnetic frequencies that are impacting our abilities to perceive.
We're talking about the efforts to charge ley lines connecting New York City and London with the consciousness of war and sacrifice. We'll be right back after this break. Just joining us, we're speaking with Peter Shampoo. We're talking about the efforts to charge certain ley lines with the consciousness of war and sacrifice. Although we've been told it's canceled, but the original proposal was to put the arch of the Temple of Baal in Times Square, where up to 460,000 pedestrians walk through on one of its busiest days. Can you talk about why that is important and the power that would be imbuing the ley line?
Back engineering this thing, this art installation proposal that was made, I really see the hand of the masons or the hand of someone who really understands these ley lines and understands the power of people and the power of sacrifice. And taking a spot like Palmyra, whether it be the post and lintel arch or opening of the Temple of Baal or the Arch de Triomphe form of the actual curvilinear arch that they're proposing now, either one's from Palmyra, and they both carry the same frequency of Palmyra, which whose ground has been saturated with the blood of the innocents from present to, you know, way back in time. what essentially that's doing is, through the power and energy of similars, is transmitting the energy of Palmyra across this ley line over to New York City via London, because there's also an installation going in Trafalgar Square, which is the center of London. Just like in Human Sacrifice, what they're doing is taking the life force from many, many beings, and the purer the beings, that's why children are sacrificed, because they're the purest. The purer the being, the greater the life force that is being given to the god, which is thought to fuel the power of the temple and the people that the community at large. So they're sacrificing for the community so that the community may flourish. So they would have these sacrifices when things were of greatest need. Things were going awry, and we got to placate the gods so the gods will favor us, so it will give life force. And it's kind of it's really, you know, cheating. Yes, there, you know, that is the case. There is life force released, just like, you know, having the act of sex, there's life force released. And but there's this, you know, there's another way to do that, you know. But this whole idea of human sacrifice is being played out on so many different levels during this time and already. And what they're trying to do is to focus this energy through the portal, through the opening of this Arch of Palmyra. For instance, you know, like 50,000 people will go through the Arch of Palmyra every day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's this communication and conveyance of energy creating an arch. So there's three arches creating an arch. Well, and I guess it doesn't exist over, and it was blown up over in Palmyra, but the etheric signature is still there. Mm. So you have these three spots, Trafalgar, Times Square, and Palmyra. And if you look at it on a global scale, there are three points with an arch going over the world. Those three points essentially line up. And whenever you're creating an arch, there's three types of stones that you use. I was a stonemason for 25 years, a classical stonemason, and built many arches myself. And you need a spring stone, which are on either side, you know, kind of the base of the arch, a keystone, the one at the top, and then arch stones are the ones that span between the key and the spring stone. And it's all gravity fed and everything, and friction, and everything is held in place that way. In this conversation, you have the two spring stones would be Palmyra and New York City, and the keystone would be London. So we have London that is a, you know, kind of, you know, if you ever explore the internet, London and the lizards and, you know, whatever, the Illuminati, and it's all in the banks of London.
Right.
It's all synonymous, and how the world is controlled is via London.
Right.
How the world is primed, the prime meridian goes through Greenwich in England, and very close to London is that's where zero longitude is. So, you know, that's how time is regulated on the planet, by where that zero is. So, you know, Greenwich Mean Time, it establishes the zero on our. It kind of defines space. It defines time. So, with that prime meridian going through England, England primes the world view. All right, so that's why we have so many parliamentary systems of the government and the market economy, which Adam Smith and everything, and the whole English worldview has taken over the whole planet. So by inserting that there, you're creating a portal into time. And by having the two spring stones in either spots, you're generating portals in place. So it creates an arch around the world, which is about a quarter the size of the Earth. And the Earth is 24,925,000 miles, and this is about 5,222 miles.
That's interesting in terms of this particular time where the Julian calendar is separated into quarters.
The cross quarter day thing, mm-hmm. and that's right. Yeah, this installation was planned to be to occur for a month period, starting in April 19th, going to June 19th, May 19th or something. That would have been during the time of May Day, mm-hmm. and May Day is really when the ley lines get fully activated. So they would be fully activating this line with an energy of war, energy of human sacrifice, that would have spanned the globe, included America, included all of Europe. The agenda that you see everywhere is that we need to control the populations, and we control the populations through fear, through warfare. We profit from the populations via the same things. We profit from suffering. We increase our treasuries by bombing people, not by saving people. Profit through suffering is an English way. That method they've spread everywhere, and it's got to end. And this type of installation on a spiritual, energetic, metaphoric, poetic level is reinforcing that paradigm, of spreading war in the guise of culture across the planet. And here's this, look at this tragedy, but at the same time, this tragedy is tied in with this blood sacrifice. And this blood sacrifice is something that is being demanded and being created, and the whole 9/11 business. It's amazing how asleep people are to that. The cognitive dissonance is really has taken a big effect on that, where it's now become part of history that's a couple of guys flew a plane into this thing, and it's like, throw a beer can against the brick wall and what happens, that's essentially what that airplane was. It's a beer can compared to those two pillars.
I think it was Dr. Judy Wood who mentioned that if you look on the wing of the plane, most planes, if you fly near the seat where you're looking at the wing, it says, no step. You're not supposed to step on that area if you're doing maintenance, because you might damage the wing.
A bird flies into it and it mangles the heck out of it. How does it fly through the building? You just don't take a building down like that. So it was done on purpose. It was an act of sabotage. It was a treasonous act of war, to create war. That was the only purpose for it, was to get people to buy into this blood sacrifice again. The pillar, and the blood sacrifice is through the Temple of Solomon, if you will. That's through Boaz and Jachin, through the Masonic pillars of Boaz and Jachin, into the Masonic altar, through the portal into the Temple of Baal. It's the same thing, and it's the same kind of consciousness that they're playing into there, that age old you know, millennial old mem that's in the consciousness of, in deep seed of our the epigenetics of our being, that, you know, this portal, these two pillars, and, you know, this blood sacrifice, you know, oh, I must pick my firstborn son and give it to Baal, you know. I mean, it's just so imbued in the human character that, you know, I don't know what they're doing. It almost feels as though that we're being ranched for our emotion, because, you know, why would someone want this kind of emotion to be so prevalent on the planet, other than for the reason of harvesting the emotion of fear and pain and suffering and everything. I just it almost seems as though that there's an alien group out there that lives off this or needs to have this in order to feel alive, and they need to, you know, keep it up so that it keeps, you know,
feeding.
Keeps them in control. At the same time, it keeps them fed.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, Peter. This is the exact theory of Matthew Deleuze, who's been on the show a number of times. Well, his forte was to identify the Ferris wheels across the world that he says those are significant structures that pull in human energy during events such as 4th of July and New Year's Eve, you know, or concerts where a mass of people show up around the Ferris wheel. Anyway, that was exactly Matthew Deleuze's theory. And so that's the first time I heard you mention that. You've not gone into that realm, but the research is very similar to Matthew's. And getting back to this particular time of year, there have been a number of events where around the spring equinox that the harvesting occurs of energy. April 19th, 1993, the Waco Massacre. April 19th, 95, Oklahoma City bombing, 168 people killed. April 20th, 1999, Columbine High School Massacre. April 16th, 2007, Virginia Tech Massacre, 32 killed. April 16th, 2013, Boston Marathon explosions. And April 18th, 2013, that fertilizer plant explosion in Texas, exactly 20 years after the Waco Massacre, right in that area.
Yeah, and it's and salient to this idea of putting this installation in. They were wanting to put that in on the 19th of April, and that, by coincidence, is the Feast of Moloch, or the Feast of Baal. So, you know, is there something within us, humans, that lead us to try to force, you know, the epigenetics of our being? Or, is there a trigger for that date to make sacrifices to Baal?
Well, in that book, In the Shadow of Moloch, there's a chapter on the psychology of sacrifice, which was really interesting, and they talked about the Aboriginals of Australia, and they developed independently of contact with the outside world. They didn't sacrifice humans or animals, but during certain ritualistic festivals, they demanded bloodletting from the worshippers, and therefore they shared with the Mayans and the Greek worshippers of Demeter the idea that some spirits demand that the blood be returned to the soil. And the book looked at the sacrifice in Greek religion, in Hindu, in Mesoamerica, and Jewish religion, and Christianity. Very interesting book. I didn't get all the way through it, but I just wanted to mention that there are some cultures that were isolated from others that still had some bloodletting for sacrifice. It goes to what your theory about, you know, there's a pull from the spirit realm.
Yeah, and it's also perhaps it's trying to, you know, get these earth energies moving. The Grand Lay of being Southern England runs from Land's End in the south southwest up to the northeast, kind of at an angle across the south of England that matches the declination of the May Day sunrise, May 1st sunrise, Beltane sunrise. And Beltane is the kind of the high holy day of pagan religions. And through syncretism, through the overlay of various, you know, of succeeding religious thought or worldview, May Day has become, you know, the feast day of Mary, and it's also become the National Workers' Day in Russia. But it's also, in May Day, is a big holiday in pagan Vedic Russia. So, but in England, what they used to do during May Day was have orgies in the fields. And they did similarly. They had orgies at this regular orgies going on at the Temple of Baal as a way in which to, you know, release life energy, life giving forces, you know, to the temple or to the ley line. Then this ley line would then be enlivened, and the general biology of the state, city, people, country, nation, world, or whatever would be enlivened. So this idea of giving blood or one's life force to the land would, you know, in the pagan mind, gave life force to the world. It was, you know, my life force to its life force, and by its life force, everyone grows, and that growth needs an extra shot in the arm in this early springtime when this life force is just getting going again.
Interesting, and I wonder what the consequences of not putting that life force into these lines, what happens?
Well, I suspect that they didn't get as great a yield in their agricultural products.
Interesting. Okay, I got you.
I can't think of a reason why they would spend that kind of effort to create this system with these megalithic stones that some of them weigh, you know, tons, you know, 100 tons. Some of them are just huge. And you know, prior to the advent of nitrogen-based fertilizers, you can't go spreading cow manure all over the place. So, you know, how do you fertilize the fields? Well, you'd fertilize the fields via nitrogen. And where does nitrogen come in a natural form? It comes from the atmosphere. So I feel that these standing stones were lightning rods, if you will, that would draw down nitrogen. Have it be a charged conduit between the ionosphere and the lithosphere. The stones are always paramagnetic, piezoelectric. The stones that they use were quite energetic in their, so they were able to, take the atmospheric charge and imbue it in the land.
A past guest, Ross Hamilton, who wrote a number of books, including Tradition of Giants, and also Brendan Brigadier helped him with that book. But in that book, he did talk about the giants at that time.
Dina.
The atmosphere was different when they would build these pyramids and put crystals on the top, and it would generate an orgone energy in the region that would lend to better blood flow, better crops.
Absolutely. Yes. We have a totally different atmosphere now, so that's why. They're not operating anymore. They're not working anymore. And why they were abandoned You know, if it was still viable, it would never have been abandoned, but it was, and it was abandoned about the same time as it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. So it's speculated, it's thought that prior to the Great Flood, which is a story that's shared all over the planet, that there was this Great Flood that happened, and the sea levels rose 300 feet, burying the old civilizations that were all out there in the continental shelf. There was a whole entirely different atmosphere, an atmosphere with a canopy, water in the high atmosphere, kind of like a crystalline or ice canopy. And so there was a whole different friction spin thing with the winds, and you know, there's probably more of a consistent atmosphere because there was less radiation reaching the ground. You could have giant flora and fauna. Humans were likely giants as well, and we see a remnant of those giants that still exists, mostly nocturnally, in the form of Sasquatch or Bigfoot or however you want to call them, you know, the big 12-footers that run around our forests.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was gravity was the issue, but radiation, that actually makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it's the same time that human lifespan reduced. You know, Methuselah, you know, prior to the fall, he was, fall of the canopy, he was 1,000 years old. And then after Noah, people started dying younger and younger.
Well, Peter, I really want to thank you for joining me to cover this strange event. As you've researched and described some of the detail here, it does seem to be almost a desperate attempt to keep the lid on business as usual, you know, of the war machine and the death machine, to keep it going.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jeff. It is the case, and thank you for having me on to discuss it. I think it's, you know, whether or not it happens, it's a good heads up on what they're trying to do here, what the program is they're trying to keep going, and what we can do to change it. And that's by, you know, keeping it high and keeping good intentions and, not falling for their tricks anymore.
Peter Champeau, you're a geographer and earthkeeper, discoverer of earth rings and the leading researcher in the field of phenomena of ley lines, earth grids, nature's geometries of scale. Your recent book is titled Moon Rivers, A Geographic Exploration of Earth's Primary Rivers. Thank you so much for joining me again on In Other News.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Thanks for tuning in, and visit inothernewsradio.com.